This copyrighted broadcast is presented by All Paws Pet Talk Radio and may not be reproduced or retransmitted in any form. Any information or segments of this show and all of the shows may not be disseminated without express written consent from the All Paws Pet Talk producer.
Medical information obtained from our website or the live show is not intended to be a substitute for professional care. If your pet has or you suspect they might have an illness or other medical condition, you should consult a health care provider. The opinions expressed on this radio program are not necessarily those of All Paws Pet Talk, this radio show, or their sponsors.
Animal lovers and pet parents, welcome back to All Paws Pet Talk Radio on TV. I'm your host and pet industry pro, Chris Rubin, along with my super duper animal knowledge panel. Today I'm going to introduce them in reverse order because I always like to mix things up, but we've got the guy who's educated in Italy, and I think we all know what that means. But Since then, he's been a vet in mixed practice in Florida. We love him and call him Dr. Don Camphor. Don, welcome. We have Janice Weiss with us today. Janice, Columbia grad, but mostly we love her because she rescues dogs, she rescues horses, she does a lot of training with different animals. She's just a wealth of knowledge. Janice, welcome to the show. And Dusty Rainbow. She and I go way back, but more importantly, she has so much knowledge about cats, more so than most people I know, because she's rescued and rehomed thousands. So welcome to the show, Dusty. And today, we're going to talk about a very interesting subject matter, and that is the difference between when you find a cat outdoors that's lost and a dog that's outdoors and lost. Because there's a bigger difference than you might know, and there's a great solution that I think this show's about. And with that, this is Animal News You Can Use. I'm going to pitch it to Dusty.
Well, thank you, Chris. Happy to be here. This month happens to be National Lost Pet Prevention Month. So it's all about preventing your lost pet. And our guest today is involved in a program that is absolutely wonderful. It's for cats. And without further ado, I'd like to introduce you to Matt. He is the marketing director for Dr. Elsie's Cat Attract. And anyway, welcome, Matt.
Thanks, Dusty. Yeah, Matt Bross, Dr. Elsie's marketing director. And we do a special program every spring where we put little orange collars in our certain bags of our cat litter. The orange collar represents a indoor cat that gets out of the house. It's, our 40-pound bags come with this. It has a little place where you can Sharpie in your phone number. The orange collar, if people see it, they're supposed to recognize that that is a, or we hope that they recognize that that is a inside cat that somehow escaped the yard, escaped the house, and will, try and approach it and find the phone number that is Sharpied onto the white area of the collar.
Well, I think this is a really exciting program, and it kind of started out by this one company, and it was called the Kitty Convict Program. And the collar, and I just happen to have one of the Dr. Elsie collar right here. Right there. And the idea was it's the same color as the convict jumpsuits or scrubs or whatever your area happens to have. And so the idea is if the cat escapes with enough public awareness and enough kitties wearing these collars, people will recognize that this kitty isn't supposed to be outside. I mean, the The problem these days is one in three cats will go missing. I'm sorry, one in three pets, dogs and cats, will go missing. But the percentage of recovery, 71% of the dogs come back to their homes, but only 53% of the cats. And a lot of that problem is because people are not aware that the cat is in trouble. I mean, dogs, you see a dog and he's like, oh, dogs aren't supposed to be out. We have a leash law. But with cats, you don't know. It just might be another outside cat. So the idea is to create a program where people go, oh, that kitty is not supposed to be out. So I'm really excited about this program, but the problem is not enough people know about it. So everybody, if you see a cat wearing one of these, look at the number. And if you have a cat that's strictly indoor, contact Dr. Elsie about getting a collar.
Yes, absolutely. We get a lot of requests for our orange collars throughout the year, and always happy to mail anybody that needs a orange collar one.
Well, now I know cats have lost cats have a specific behavior, but Janice, what happens when a dog becomes displaced or lost?
Well, that's a great question. The cats tend, as Dusty knows, to avoid people. But you don't know if a dog has a behavioral issue, if the dog perhaps is fearful. And people tend to do really dumb things to try to capture dogs that they don't know, like jumping on them, grabbing for their collars, things like that. And then people get bitten, and the dog, who's terrified already, winds up with behavioral issues. I teach everybody, all of my patients, the patients are obviously the dogs, the humans are the clients, and I teach all of the patients not to run out the doors. Remember also, a cat can escape out of a window that's open a few inches. You know, your 800, or I should say 80 pound, lab isn't probably going to make it out a window in the bathroom that's, open 3 inches unless it can open it more. So I think when cats get out, probably the families aren't as aware as quickly because they're not expecting them to be out. Where your dog, you come in the house and, you say, where's the dog? Mm-hmm. So it's important for people, and I'm sure we could do it with cats because I've certainly done a lot of behavior on cats. One of the things to do is to make sure that your dog knows not to go crossing any threshold in or out of the house without permission. And that's actually a couple of my books as well. But it's very simple. It's teaching the dog not to continue to go through an open door. And then you teach the dog, now can we teach a cat? Good luck on that. But when you do try to capture an animal, it's better for you to call the authorities who are suited up and have a better ability to do that and are also covered with liability insurance than for you to say, dogs love me. I've had dogs my whole life. I told you how many people have gotten bitten in the face, really ripped up, because the dog is already afraid of where it is. And now a stranger is like looming over them, like, I'm going to jump on you. And I'd be running too. So, there's something to be said for that. If people really want to rescue, especially with dogs, get yourself a nice rope slip lead. And we'll do that on a future show. I think, Dusty, this would be great, where you can explain how people can approach cats to try to get the cat. And I can explain how to capture dogs, horses, and rabbits. But people, please don't try to pounce on an animal, cat or dog or anything, because all of a sudden they're afraid. They get fearful and they change their behavior pretty quickly. So let's see. I wanted to hear why we, because I know with dogs, when they have an orange or yellow loop or ribbon on their leash, it signifies that they have issues and don't wish to be bothered. So I it would be nice if we had something comparable for dogs, because we all think, like, I'm in New Jersey and you know, the Northeast here, we see a dog on the street, we go, oh my God, somebody's dog is out. But where you guys are, Texas, Florida, some of the warmer climates, people let their dogs walk around. So I think maybe this Orange Collar Project isn't a bad idea to also use for indoor dogs, so that people in those regions know, uh-oh, there's one with an orange collar, and it's not a hunting dog, because obviously with hunting dogs, they use orange collars as well, so they're not getting shot at by avid beer drinkers. So I think we should try to gear it towards that. What I wanted to know about is cat litter, because I get all these questions from people. Why do my dogs eat the, you know, cat poop? And the cat poop also, I know, contains a lot of nitrogen, because cats can't fix nitrogen. So there's so much nitrogen in the food because they can process so little. But what kind of cat litter is good for cats? I'm dying to know that.
Wow. Are you asking me? Well, the problem is not what is necessarily the best, but what the cat likes. There are a lot of different kinds of cat litter. There's the clay, there's the crystal, there's all kinds of things. And as it turns out, Dr. Elsie's provides all of them, and most of them have an attractive additive that's in them. But Matt, why don't you take this? What can you tell us about the cat litter?
Sure. So Dr. Elsie's cat litter, we produce two different varieties. We have a clumping clay and a crystal line, and there's multiple varieties under that for different purposes. Our goal at Dr. Elsie's is to always do what's best for the cat. Mm-hmm. So we have, in fact, looked at like some other types of litter, corn cob media, paper, tofu. There's all sorts of different kinds coming out right now. And through our testing, we've decided that clumping clay and crystal are the two best options. The other ones, you know, harbor bacteria. They mold. They don't absorb the odors near as well as silica and clumping clay. I mean, it's, like I said, what's best for the cat and their owner. So we do have our cat attract is a clumping clay, and then we also have crystal attract that is a silica crystal litter. And those have, the cat attract has a special ingredient combination of ingredients that attracts cats to the litter box. It's great for kittens, new cats, you know, adopted cats, because it will help relieve some of the anxiety of the owner and the cat by attracting it to the litter box. It just helps eliminate the inappropriate elimination, which is the number one reason why cats are either euthanized or given to a shelter. It's inappropriate elimination. And that's why Dr. Elsie developed Cat Attract. I mean, that's basically what the company was built on, was the solution to keep cats in loving homes, helping cats and their owners. So the Cat Attract is a great one. Our Ultra is another clumping clay. It doesn't have the attractant. It's just a basic hard clumping, excellent odor control. Those are our two big ones. So as far as our litter goes, that's, you know, what we've built our company off of.
I just have a question, Matt. Is that Cat Attract available? Like, let's say somebody wants to use a different medium for their cat. Is that also available as something like a drop or something that people could put into the cat litter that they want? Or is that just something you have to purchase the cat litter and it has that already in it?
Yeah, we do have, we sell the attractant as it's available in a 20-ounce pouch. And actually, I thought I had a bag here, but I don't.
One item.
So you can get from Chewy, Amazon, PetSmart, a whole bunch of places have it available. It's just a 20-ounce pouch, and that will treat 100 pounds of litter. We recommend it for clumping clay, but it should be effective in whatever kind of litter the cat owner uses.
I have a question relating to dogs with cat litter. A lot of times people have, a cat and a dog, or multiples of each, or one, and they say, my dog is always in the litter box trying to eat the poop from the cat, but they're also worried because obviously if a dog is eating clay that clumps, that can also create a blockage. So Dr. Don, I have a question for you. How many times, how often is that you have seen in your last however many years of practice where you've seen a dog with a blockage, some kind of obstruction or impaction from eating cat litter that way?
Well, actually, the last impaction I've seen, we see more with sand. I've seen it pot-bellied pigs, and of course, horses are infamous for sand colic. Strangely enough, I have not seen sand. What we do see, most of your clay litters contain a chemical or a substance called bentonite. It's the mineral that the clay comes from, and it is a toxin to them. You can get bentonite poison from eating clay litter. I forgot exactly what all the symptoms are of it. It's not very common, but we do caution people with clumping litters that even the traditional clay litter, if you eat it or they lick enough of it off of their paws, you can get bentonite toxicity from it. But I have not seen a lot of cases of it, more from natural sand than from cat litter.
Okay, folks, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back after these messages from our sponsors.
Hi, I'm Burt Ward, Robin from Batman, and I believe there is nothing more precious than life. 20 years ago, we got a dog for our daughter to grow up with, and she became our daughter's best friend. Everything we did with our dogs, she did with her dog. Then she fell in love with two Great Dane puppies. We were worried because we knew that large dogs normally live only 7 to 9 years. But we found a way to keep her dogs and our dogs wonderfully healthy and living many years longer. Living as long as 27 healthy, active years. We created Gentle Giants, a special low-fat, heart-healthy, super premium dog food and a unique feeding and care program that we believe has added precious years to the lives of our dogs. And we'd like to do the same thing for you and your dog. Life doesn't have to be too short for your best friend. All natural, Gentle Giants, for the longer, healthier, happier life of your dog.
Gentle Giants for life.
Hey folks, welcome back to All Paws Pet Talk Radio and TV. We're having this great discussion with Matt from Dr. Elsie's cat litter and cat attract and orange collars that you would put on indoor cats. And I have some thoughts on microchipping, but I'm going to pitch it to Doc because I'm sure he's going to ask the question far more elegantly. Doc?
Okay, thank you. Microchips are the identification technology par excellence. They're as of 2023, it's probably the best technology that we've got. Better than tattoos. Tattoos have obvious defects. They fade. They get covered with hair. They're illegible. What are you going to tattoo an animal with? Your social security number, your phone number, all the changes. Tags can get lost. The cheaper ones made out of aluminum. I never use aluminum tags because the script on them wears off with when they rub. So tags and tags can be removed by somebody who wants to keep your animal or just said they found it. Animals can lose their tags, lose their collars. Microchips are inside an animal. They are indelible. The newer technology tags now actually allow you to encode them with your name, address, phone number, and other useful information. They require a different type of reader than the traditional universal readers we've been using up till now. but the technology is coming. But a microchip is your best insurance that you can have of getting your animal back should something happen. Most animal hospitals, veterinarians, animal control officers, humane societies, all of them are supposed to scan every animal that comes their way. The first thing we do in my practice when somebody comes up with an animal and says, hey, we just found this, first thing we do is take out the scanner. And as somebody else, I think, mentioned earlier, you need to register that chip and you need to keep it updated. Microchips are only as good as the information that you provide to the microchip company. You know, we, at least once a week, we'll get something that somebody came, found on the road, we'll scan it. And, you know, it was registered to some little old lady up in Milwaukee who gave it to her niece who went to college in Florida, who gave it to her roommate, who gave it to her boyfriend, who went home for Kaya for the weekend and gave it to his mother. And you know, essentially it's lost. Even though it's got a microchip in it, it might as well not, because the chip is less than worthless. So you need to keep your information updated. Well, the website that I usually start with is the one run by the American Animal Hospital Association. It's called petmicrochiplookup.com. It's all one word, lowercase, and you just put in your chip number and it will immediately come up to where the chip was implanted, who implanted it, when it was implanted, and a contact phone number. Mm-hmm. And that's a great starting place. The other thing is, a lot of your chip companies charge registration fees. I tell all my clients, you know, try to register your chip with as many websites as you can. The more sites you register them with, the better you improve the odds of somebody getting it back to you. There's lots of free ones out there. You should not have to pay to register them. All of these sites want your personal information. They're all going to try to sell you something, pet insurance, food, whatever. You know, that's the way e-commerce works these days. But you got to keep those chips registered. When we implant a microchip, I'm actually going out this afternoon on a house call for a client, got to put a microchip in her dog, got picked up by animal control. I tell them, do not go to sleep at night until that chip is registered. You don't take off your pajamas, put on your pajamas, you don't turn off the lights, you don't brush your teeth, you don't get into bed until you have registered that microchip. Otherwise, you know, life happens, we get busy, we forget, and next thing you know, it's like the dog from the little old lady in Milwaukee that not gets lost.
Well, as a matter of fact, this week, to illustrate that, a neighbor came to me and said there was a stray cat and she was very sick. Well, we found a microchip in her, but it hadn't been updated since 2010. And as it turned out, because I've been an investigative reporter, I tracked down the person and she'd moved 18 times in 20 years. So, you know, there was no way to get a hold of her because phone numbers have changed, everything's changed. And the vet who implanted it hadn't seen her since that first day in 2010. So, you're getting ready to move. You need to, or you get a new phone number, call the company and change it, because it doesn't do any good if the information is obsolete.
Yeah, very good. I've got a couple of questions though, along those lines for Matt. Kind of play devil's advocate. You know, cats notoriously are hard to put and keep collars on. A lot of the collars, when I used to have my small animal clinics, we used to sell the collars with the breakaway feature or the little elastic band in them. So if they get caught, yeah, I was going to ask you, do your collars have a safety feature for them? And of course, remember that if the safety feature gets used, it's kind of like the airbag in your car. It gets used once and then it's not there anymore. So, you know, in the event that the cat does manage to catch its collar or catch its head on something and the collar comes off, I would imagine that somewhat defeats the purpose of having it on there. And the other thing is, you know, it could be a great idea. What efforts is your company making? Because this is the first I've heard of it, to get public knowledge out there. You know, it's taken years, if not decades, you know, to get people used to the concept of tipping the cat's ears with the trap neuter release programs, that if you see a cat running around and its, you know, left ear is tipped, that means it's had a rabies shot and been fixed and somebody at some point, you know, was looking out for it. But as far as the significance of an orange collar, you know, on a cat that you see walking down the street, I've not heard of that before. What kind of PR campaign, if any, is your company, you know, promoting to get that knowledge out there?
Yeah, we do a lot of social campaigns. We have a sticker on the bags every spring and summer when we insert the orange collar. There's a little card that comes with each orange collar, and it you know, kind of talks through why we're doing it. We have a hashtag Orange Inside. Hashtag Orange Inside is, you know, how we get the public to help spread the word. It is a breakaway collar. And like you say, after, you know, one time, it's not very effective. So we put it in every 40-pound bag of litter that is part of the program. So we do get, I mean, most people during the campaign every year, most people will get a couple of collars, a backup if they need one. And like I said, whenever they need, if anybody needs a collar or didn't get one in their bag of litter, you know, we ship out hundreds of collars throughout the year. I mean, I have a box sitting right outside my office right now full of orange collars.
Yeah, I would say your 40-pound bags, you know, that's a pretty good size. That's for somebody probably with a multi-cat household. But the little old lady who lives on the second floor of an apartment, you know, who has a single cat, which is, you know, the one likely to be escape and get lost, you know, she's not going to be lugging no 40 pounds of cat food up the stairs. So you're losing out on a large audience of either older people or people that are on maybe tighter budgets, or people that only have one or two cats that might be buying just a, you know, a 10 or 20 pound bag of cat litter once a month. So maybe that there's a large segment of the cat owning public there that's not getting addressed.
Yeah, that's a good point. And something that we need to look at is, you know, there's two sides to it. I mean, how do we further educate the public and, you know, make it so everybody is aware of the orange collar and the purpose of the orange collar? And also, how do we get more orange collars into people's hands? I mean, it's hard to it's difficult to get an orange collar into the bags, for one thing. Somebody has to stand by our conveyors and drop them in one at a time. And so far, it made sense to do this with the larger bags. But, you know, definitely something that we've been thinking about looking into. And, you know, how do we get more orange collars out to the public?
Hang on,
guys. We got to take a break. I know I have something to say. Y'all have something to say, but we got to let our sponsors say something first. So we'll be right back.
I'm Burt Ward, Robin from TV's Batman, inviting you to feed your dog Gentle Giant's canned dog and puppy food, prepared with fresh meats, fresh fruits, and fresh vegetables that can make a huge difference in taste and nutrition for your dog. Our 27-and-a-half-year-old wolfhound, Tara, has lived more than triple her normal lifespan, eating only Gentle Giant's dry dog food mixed with Gentle Giant's canned dog food at Target, HEB, and stores near you. Try Gentle Giant's cat and kitten food, too.
Gentle Giant's for life.
Hey, folks, welcome back to All Paws Pet Talk Radio and TV. You know, great question or great point made by Doc earlier is that there's a segment of the population that may need more or different efforts to get them educated on this program, because this orange collar program is really pretty smart. I know that when I drive down the road and I see a bunch of dudes in orange jumpsuits, I know they're not meant to be outside. Unless they're supervised. So I think the concept makes perfect sense. And another way that this gets promoted is with people like Dusty Rainbolt, who has a book coming out, and she's writing about this. Dusty, tell us a little bit more about that.
Actually, this book has been out since 2017, and I did write about the Orange Collar Project in there. And I kind of look at it, it's called Finding Your Lost Cat, the Practical Cat-Specific Guide to Finding Your Lost Cat. Anyway, or to your happy reunion. Anyway, I think we are now where microchips were in, say, the mid-70s. There was a pet food company that sold microchips, and you send them enough little proof of purchase squares off the back, and they'd send you a microchip. And I think that's where Dr. Elsie is now. In the beginning, they didn't save cats. And you talk to people, and they said, well, there's no point. It never helps cats. And then all of a sudden, there was one cat that was returned home because of the microchip. And it was just amazing. And so then from there, it snowballs. So it's just a matter of, we have to educate people, and buy my book if you've lost a cat or if you want to prevent losing your cat. But we just need to get the word out. And you need to tell your friends, hey, I got an orange cat collar for my cat. If you see him outside, he's not supposed to be out. And word of mouth and getting the press and interested in it is, I think, two of the best ways to do it. And Janice, I think you had something to say.
Yeah, social media these days, for pets that are lost, they tend to focus on dogs because, again, you see a dog out. And dogs also tend to be more visible. The average dog is going to walk down the street, maybe walk near a house or in someone's yard. But cats are going to be more stoic and maybe hide under things. They're typically smaller. Mm-hmm. They're easier to lose, basically. And how do you capture a cat? It's very hard when something can jump straight up and crawl to the top of a tree. But with social media and all, I can't imagine that there isn't something or someone who's got a website or who's got something geared toward, hey, I lost my cat. And, it's this or whatever. I've seen lost dog signs, hundreds of them. I've seen a few lost cat signs. And you never see, oh, we found him. It's always like still looking, lost in, 2018. And 5 years later, they didn't find the cat. Also going to microchipping, obviously is an identification. But the thing is that microchips do not help you find your lost animal. They only help once somebody has found your lost animal. There are, and I hope we'll do this on a future show, there are wonderful now transceivers that will, basically you can go on your cell phone and track your animal and know exactly where your animal is. And that's not a microchip. I think a lot of people mistakenly believe that a microchip is somehow a tracking device, and it's not. It has to be scanned. So it has to be, within, I guess, few inches. So I think the problem is that people assume that a microchip is actually able to assist searchers and rescuers potentially in finding that animal. And microchips are not for that at all. So microchips, they're actually holding a scanner directly over the chip, and it's identification. Think of it as the same as if you have a tag on the animal's collar. The tag doesn't help you to locate the animal. The tag merely identifies the animal. So there are other types of transponders and such that your dog, particularly because they're a little large for a cat, but if you have an animal who likes to, vanish, those are great because you can actually have multiple people accessing it and locating the animal. It's pretty amazing technology. I just bought my daughter four of them, one for each of her dogs, after one of her dogs, which is a rescued husky, decided to take off and they couldn't find it. And I bought her four of them. And the dog has run away several times subsequently. And she's actually been able to track it on a bicycle and know where it is. So definitely we'll have to do a show about that. To be able to help people who have animals who kind of are, career offenders,
Mm-hmm. like smells the cat with the TSA lady.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Doc, what say you?
Yeah, the radio frequency, you know, ID tags are becoming, I mean, they use them as anti-theft devices in all the stores when, you know, those little tags that they put in packages, you know, to set off the alarm when you leave the store. They're becoming ever more commonplace. The U.S. Department of Agriculture now is switched over all the ear tags that we use on pigs and cattle and sheep and goats all have radio frequency ID chips in them now. Mm. That's just the way of the future. A lot of the new ones, I've got a client who runs a local feed store, and they sell them there. They got them on the counter for the hunters. They said they're a little bit too big for the cats, but most of the hunters now put them on their hunting dog collars. So at the end of the hunt, you know, the dogs that don't come back, get out your cell phone and you can find where the dog is and go track it down and get it back in the truck. So they're becoming more commonplace. They use them. The wildlife people have been using them, you know, to track wildlife for years. They have tiny ones that they can put on small birds. Everybody's seen the ones that, you know, on the marine animals that they put on sharks and manatees and, you know, sea turtles. And those are larger ones, of course, with bigger batteries that can be tracked by satellite for, you know, they've got battery lives in the months and months. The smaller ones for, you know, our cats and dogs, unfortunately, they're limited by battery size and battery life. But for short term, like, you know, you're going on a hunt or you're just going on vacation, camping, taking the animal with you just for a few days. They are out there and they're not that expensive.
Well, and the other problem with that is since cats tend to lose their collars, if you have the chip on there, if they get caught in a tree or whatever, the collar's gone and you've lost it. And I don't think that's quite as much of a problem for the dogs, but eventually maybe we'll figure it out.
Hey, Matt, how many of these orange collars, since you guys started this program, how many do you think you've given out?
Oh, hey, millions.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly sure when we started the program. Obviously, before 2017, but probably 2 to 3 million callers, I would guess.
That's amazing, because I mean, you do have wide distribution, right? So there's a store near you carrying Dr. Elsie's product. You say you do this during spring and summer?
Yep.
And you do that what, to coincide with kitten season, or what, June National Cat Month? Is that how you tie it in?
Both. It's, you know, spring and summer are when, you know, cats are going to be outdoors more often. It didn't make sense during the winter, fall or winter, to launch it because, you know, the cats are inside. If we do it during the spring and summer, then, you know, people are going to know, okay, now is the prime opportunity for my cat to escape, get out of the house, and I need to put this on right now.
Well, but you think about it, if it's an escapee, it doesn't matter what time of year it is, because cats slip out the door, the neighbor kids leave the door open or whatever. That could happen any time of year.
Well, we've all seen the TikTok or YouTube videos, you know, the cat that goes out and puts, you know, one paw in the snow and turns around and runs inside again.
That's true.
But while we're on cat litter, from a veterinary standpoint, I noticed ever more companies. I noticed it at the Global Pet Expo in Orlando, and then see a lot of the others advertised in the professional journals. A lot of the cat litter companies now are coming out with the diagnostic type litters. You know, they'll put chemical reagents in there that'll turn color depending on the characteristic of your cat's urine if it has different problems. Do you guys have anything along those lines or plans to introduce something along those lines?
We do. We're working on it right now. We're still a little ways away. We've tried different tools to detect problems, medical problems with cats. I mean, we had a scale where you could weigh the feces and or the urine. And it, I mean, obviously it was difficult. We have tried a lot of different things. We finally found something that actually detects blood in the urine.
Oh, yay. Great
amount of blood.
That's awesome.
Probably 6 months away from being ready to launch that, but you know, we're getting close, and Dr. Elsie's been working on this, I mean, his entire career, trying to detect blood. And one misconception about blood in the urine, a lot of people think that it is a, you know, it's some sort of a medical problem, like the kidneys, and which sometimes it is, but we've determined that the vast majority of blood in a cat's urine is caused by anxiety, an anxious cat, you know, environmental problems. There's not enough litter boxes for multi-cat households or, you know, something like that. And so being able to identify blood in a cat's urine is going to be huge.
Oh, I can't wait for that. That's another book that I wrote, but yes, stress and anxiety are the most common cause of giving cats up and euthanasia, because they're peeing outside the box because it hurts.
Exactly.
And it's the same pain you feel when you have a bladder infection, but it's a different cause.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, what I like about everything I just heard is that we're trying to continue down a path of doing better work, making it easier for the consumer. Because on this show, we talk a lot about the fact that cats and dogs just, they don't tell you that they're in pain, especially cats. So you can misread many things unless you're really tuned in. Most of us are tuned in to as much as they can be, you know, with as much working knowledge as we have as good pet parents, but making it easy and convenient to create better wellness outcomes for our animals. I mean, that's basically responsible pet ownership every month. And I appreciate that. What else do we have for Matt today? Talk to me.
I guess we've really gone over pretty much everything today that I can think of. But I think the biggest thing is, anybody who's watching this show, you know that we hit very different, unique topics. Most of you probably don't know what this Orange Collar Project, and those of you who are dog lovers who are here to find out how to fix your aggressive dog, I'm happy to help you. But you know people who are animal lovers and neighbors and friends. Post it on your Facebook or your social media and just say, like, hey, did you know there's this Orange Collar Project? If you have, let's say, 1,000 followers or even a couple of hundred, think of how many they have, how many people they know who would be able to learn this, and tell people about it, give them Dr. Elsie's information, or I'm sure they can just go buy a little orange cat off of Amazon, you know, little orange collar off of Amazon. But let people know, because I think the biggest misconception with animals, whether it's horses, dogs, cats, you know, anything, is, oh, they probably know that already. And if there's one thing I've learned in all my years, 40 plus years of being an animal behaviorist, is that things that I assume people know, they don't. So please let people know. Even if you say, oh, this lady's had 8 cats and she's the crazy cat lady, she may not know. Rescue that you may have gotten your animal from, they may not know. So if you're following their page, just throw up a post that says, hey, did you know there's an Orange Collar Project? Because together we can try to save all these animals. Like, listen, I'm a dog person. But the worst thing in the world is thinking that I see a cat and maybe it's not supposed to be there because it's an indoor cat. And I'm assuming that it's okay outside. So help everybody to help these animals, and we'll prevent more animals from not being found.
And Matt, how do people get a hold of you if they want to get a hold of you for this purpose?
You can come to drelsies.com, drelsies.com. And there is a link where you can email us. You can give us a call, 877-311-2287. Whatever works best.
Well, just get a hold of them, people. As Janice said, I know Dusty's already been preaching the gospel. Like Doc, I just found out about it, and I love the topic because I think it's great. People need visual codes. We have visual and color codes on everything, right? So this was very informative. Dusty, thank you for fetching this guest. Matt, it was a real pleasure. I can't wait to see you in a couple weeks. You know where that's going to be.
Absolutely.
In the meantime, panel, thank you, and we'll be back soon on the next episode of All Paws Pet Talk Radio and TV. Awesome.